Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Michael Janz, founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry, and then to discern and deconstruct what they do to help you grow your agency faster. I'm thrilled about this one. I think we did our job on this one. I'm bringing in an old friend of mine, an old client of mine, and frankly, he is just a class act, very generous. He didn't hold anything back. Greg Wilkes is the founder and owner of the of Insurance Solutions Group International. International because they, in fact, are international. They've got business throughout the United States, Puerto Rico included, and South America. And in this conversation, I said, Greg, you must have 10x'd, grown 10 times since you started as a client of mine, I don't know, 12 or 13 years ago. He said, no, 20x. Now, he did start it from scratch. So, you know, maybe 20x isn't saying that much, but it's actually quite a bit. He has a substantial agency in the South. He's got, as I recall, he's got five locations. He's got business everywhere. His growth per year is should be the admiration of every agency. And as I said, he just delivers the goods in this conversation. Here's what we talk about. We talk about his strategy for the growth of his agency, cultivating whales, okay? In other words, cultivating very, very large commercial accounts, according to a definition which he will share with you in this conversation. And that definition grows every single year because it's based on the average size agency and the business. In his business, without much further ado, I want to invite you to participate in this conversation. It is a writer downer, so for those of you who are driving, you may want to listen to it again. He shares a very simple system, a very simple method for attracting and landing whales. At the end of the conversation, after the podcast, I have an afterword, and I'll tell you what I address in that one. There's a couple of things. Number one, the issue, very briefly, the issue of commercial lines versus personal lines, and do you need commercial lines or not? And so I address that one. And then I also address a comment that has come from one or more of my own podcast guests in this series, which is that, gosh, given the state of the industry right now, it has been suggested by some that agents should be ready to cede personal lines, and I will comment on that one. So if you want to hang and listen to my afterword, feel free to. If you don't, you don't have to. So now, without further ado, I want to introduce you to my guest, a class act, an excellent agency owner, Greg Wilkes. Hello, Greg Wilkes. It's a pleasure to reconnect with you after many years, and it's a thrill to have you on this podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Michael. Glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
So we are going to talk about the more or less total transformation of your agency since I have known you, which the audience should probably be aware it's maybe been 15 years.
That's about right, yes. We started our scratch agency 15 years ago, so probably between 12 and 13 years ago, we started talking to one another.
And so since then, since that scratch agency, Give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of what's happened, and maybe what was it then, and what is it now?
Well, you know, when you open an agency from scratch, you're basically a generalist for all accounts, and we were writing anyone that would come to us. I remember the first day being in the office, and my cousin and I looked at each other and said, "Who do you know?" Well, who do you know? And we started hitting the phone lines, and we started making the visits, and we had some individuals that said, "Come back to me when you've been in business a year, and then we'll talk." So we had to earn that business from day one, and it's been a wonderful ride. It's been a lot of work, but you know, we're entrepreneurs by nature, so we really enjoyed the ride. We're growing. You know, our goal was to grow a million a year,
right.
And the first 10 years, that's not that difficult. With renewals, that becomes more difficult after 10 years,
mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to achieve now by writing much larger accounts than when we first started out.
So when we first started working together, your agency was, first of all, small. Secondly, mostly personal lines and small commercial lines.
That is correct. We were probably 70% personal lines, and the rest were probably $2,500 average account on the commercial line side.
And how would you characterize it now?
Now we're 77% commercial lines, and about 30% of that is large commercial.
And our focus primarily for today's conversation is going to be on the latter, your large commercial and the transformation that has made. But how else would you characterize the business? How is it different than it was back in the early days?
Well, when we hit, you know, going from being a generalist and writing just anyone and everyone, and you look at your book of business after about 5 years and you realize, wow, everybody we've got is a small account. And there's nothing wrong with that because it builds a solid foundation. But then on the flip side, you start looking at, okay, when I retire, and hopefully one day I can do that, when I retire, what does my book bring in return? And we started looking at, and one of the things that you've always taught us is the lifetime value of a client. That's important, making money day by day, but it's also important when one day you sell your agency, can you retire or not?
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to change our focus, and I did that in one of your classes, actually, and we flipped the switch, and basically what we went after, we started writing.
Which class was that, Greg?
That was the Niches to Riches class, and I don't remember exactly what city it's in, but I still have the binder, and I still refer back to it probably on a monthly basis just to make sure we're still on track to doing the right thing.
I'm totally embarrassed because I'm not sure. I still have those binders since we made the move here to Cave Creek. I let go of tons of old stuff. So so that class was kind of a tipping point or a decision point for the agency.
It really was. What it allowed us to do was to look in advance. You know, what about those retirement years? What kind of agency are we going to have? What kind of value is it going to have? And we knew if we continued for the next 10, 15, 20 years writing the type of accounts we started writing, we were not going to have a whole lot of retirement.
Got it.
And we needed to do something to change that.
Okay.
And the Niches to Riches really helped.
Okay. And so you've added volume.
Most definitely.
Okay, as I recall, you've really expanded your footprint. So you have more than one location. Is that right?
That is correct. When you and I first started working together, we were one location and three individuals. We're five locations now and 26 individuals.
Okay, so and you've got business. You have international business.
Yes, we had to change our LLC name. So that the Insurance Solutions Group International, LLC, became prominent.
Got it. All right. So, by the way, congratulations on your success. Let's talk about how you did it, okay?
Okay.
So the focus for the conversation is on, I think, what you would call the whales. How to attract the whales and how to land the whales, right?
That is correct.
And so how do you define a whale?
A whale for us, by definition, when we take a producer or when we take our agency and we look at what is the average size account that you have, A whale is described as being 5 to 10 times the size of your average account. So if your average account is $10,000, a whale for you may be $50,000 to $100,000.
Got it.
If your average size account is $10,000, then you know it's $50,000 to $100,000, or it could be $500,000 to $1,000,000.
Uh-huh.
But you got to figure out where you are today, and it's got to be realistic. You know, we want to stretch our boundaries, but it has to be realistic. Do I have the markets? Do I have the people? Do I have the capacity or the knowledge or the experience to write those type accounts?
Well, a lot of people don't, right?
And so, correct.
So we want to talk about how, because you may have felt, you know, that you didn't have the capacity or the experience or the technical expertise 13 years ago to do what you're doing now. So we want to, I will want to dive into how you got there so you had the capability first, okay? You had made reference in our previous conversation about maybe a primary shift, like something that has to happen even before you add capacity, before you get technical skill, before you put together a model to attract and land the whales, which is the mindset shift.
Yes, that is correct. We really had to change. And it's almost like if you want to buy a Mustang, all of a sudden everything that you see on the road is a Mustang. And what you're looking for is typically what you find.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of like, and I use a fishing analogy a lot because I grew up with catfish ponds and bass and bream in the South. And if you're standing with just your feet in the water, you're only going to see the minnows. That's what you're looking for, basically. If you're going to get out into the deep where the big fish are, you've got to have different equipment. You've got to have a different mindset about going after those type of fish. And that's what we had to do internally before we could even go after it. One of the classes that you taught, one of the things that you said to me is that when you decide to make a mind shift or a change in your mindset, look at what your current book of business is.
Right.
What are you already good at? What are you knowledgeable at? And what are you passionate about? And we kind of took those three things and we kind of grew the business from there.
So let's talk about how you got from the shallow waters where the minnows hang out, because you primarily were writing personal lines, small commercial lines. How you got comfortable with getting into the deeper water, what was it that allowed you to make that mental change to be comfortable hanging out where the whales are? So, because at some point you got to go from, you know, I'm the guy who's been writing like, minimum limits of personal lines or whatever, right? And all of a sudden now you're knocking on the door of somebody that's got $100,000 account, and you got to be able to present yourself as the guy. How did you do that?
Well, we took one of the large contractors that I had written because I happened to have a personal relationship with the decision maker.
Got it.
And that probably had as much to do with it as anything. But he gave us a testimonial. And so what I did was I created a campaign. And at that time, it was snail mail. And I put his testimonial with his name and his phone number, of course, with his permission, and I sent it out to a whole host of contractors just like him.
Right.
And you know, all the ones that called me called him first.
Ah.
To vouch. Because, you know, and you've said this to me before, you know, people, they don't want to hear what you got to say about yourself. They trust what other people have to say about you. So
right.
we let him be our advocate. And that's what he did for us, because we were doing him a good job and because we had a personal relationship with him. And that one flyer brought in over $1 million worth of business within the next 3 months.
Okay, so I am curious about this. Are you still doing direct mail?
We are still doing direct
okay,
mail.
Got it.
Direct mail will always be a part of our campaign.
Got it. Okay. Glad to hear that, and glad to hear that it's working. And so the snowball got rolling. That's how you got the snowball rolling.
It is. And it sounds so simple, and I just wish I'd done it 10 years earlier.
Okay, well, but you did it over 10 years ago, so here we are talking about it now. And so would you say that your definition of the whale for your agency has changed because it's grown?
It has. Okay. It really has. Well, and not only that, but the income that these whales have brought in has allowed us to hire additional staff to take on the smaller segment of business, which has freed some of us up to continue to write larger accounts.
Okay. And so let's face an obstacle that I run into as an advisor a lot, a question, and that I know a lot of agents and brokers do, which is, you know, there probably are those who are listening to what Greg has to say right now, and they might be thinking, that's fine, but I'm already working 50, 60 hours a week. So how am I going to add this on? Did you have to deal with that?
We did. You know, the first 4 or 5 years, it was go to work all day, get home, spend some time with the family, have dinner with them, put them to bed, get the laptop back out, work till midnight or one. You know, and then, you know, the next day it was the same thing all over again.
Okay, so there was a sacrifice, right?
Yes.
Now, looking back at that, is there anything that you think you could have or would have done differently so that you maybe would have sacrificed less but still gotten similar results?
If I had started day one segmenting a portion of my time, you know, we used to use the Mad Dog Time Optimizer.
Indeed, right.
It's amazing the products that I still use today that I used, 12, 13 years ago with you. But if I had segmented that 30% of my day to going after larger accounts, I wouldn't have had to work so hard because writing a large account, a lot of times people don't understand this, it doesn't require that much more of your time in putting together submissions. Instead of it being two autos, it's 200 autos.
Right.
So it doesn't require that much more time in writing a large account, but the residual income that comes in from that account, it allows you to do so much more.
Okay. So for agencies that are listening to this and thinking, and I suspect that there are some who are thinking, I've thought about this for a long time. And for some, maybe this is a new idea. And then, of course, for a lot of our listeners, maybe they're getting refreshed on things that they know or forgot. What do you think are some of the considerations that an agency or an agent should think about? Like, you know, what if I can't deliver on this, or what if I can? You know, what are the pros and cons that that an agency needs to think about before making a strategic choice, which you made?
Well, to me, the biggest thing is you have to buy into it. It can't be I'm going to dip my toes in the water and I may call a few people this week. It has to be a part of your sales cycle. It has to be a mindset that's going after it. If you do it haphazard, the sales cycle, because it takes relationship, it takes trust, the sales cycle is going to be too long. You're not going to make as many sales. You're going to have a constant state of disappointment, and you'll go broke. But if you can do it and you can achieve it, one of the things that we know is that basically the top 20% of our accounts pays about 80% of our bills. So if you can deliver on it, not only your confidence and your competence is going to increase, but you and your agency are going to increase as well. I use the analogy of fishing. We're not fishing just so that we can eat tonight. As owners of businesses, we're trying to put fish in the freezer for retirement. We got to eat next week and next year. And when we sell our agency, we got to eat the next 20 years after that. So it's not just about feeding ourselves for today. We're feeding ourselves for retirement.
Got it. All right. So let's kind of address that issue of time. These deals take longer. They take more time.
Correct.
And it's not just because the submission's going to take a little bit longer. Right?
That is correct. Well, you have to look at it from their side. On a large account, they have options.
Right.
You know, they could always go with the cheapest. They could always go with the largest agency. They can always stay with the incumbent. And they look at you coming in as the oddball, the unknown, the question mark. they're going to go, in most cases, the other three look more appealing. So you can't be just the cheapest, and you can't be just the largest. You've also got to be the safest answer that they have, because if they go with the cheapest, they're not going to lose their job if something goes wrong. If they go with the largest agency, they're not going to lose their job if something goes wrong. So it's not only about being big, and it's not only about being cheap. You've got to be the safest answer for them.
So how do you communicate to your prospect that you are the safest?
We try to explain to them that our goal is not to come in and be a dollar cheaper.
Right.
Because that only lasts for one sales cycle. 12 months from now, you know, is that what I want to have happen? I want five people in here quoting, and then it's all up in the air all over again. What we're trying to do is build a long-lasting relationship. And what we explain to them, this takes a year just to get started. So we're looking for a three-year commitment day one.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we meet with them, every time we talk to them, we're explaining that's why this is a three-year deal. That's why we want the commitment. It takes 3 years. If you want your mod to get lower, it's not going to change because your mod's based on what happened 2 years ago. It's what we do today that affects what you're going to be paying 2 to 3 years down the road.
Are there promises that you make that you'll do some things differently than most competitors?
Most competitors, even the ones who have the ability to do it, they don't give them that 30,000-foot view when they first meet with them and explain to them, here's what our sales cycle consists of. Like for us, we tell them once a month, here's what you're going to get from us. Here's what we're going to do for you. Here's why we're doing it for you, because it leads to the ultimate goal of lower rates.
Got it. Okay. And so that three-year commitment, is that a verbal, like a sort of a social contract?
Starts off verbally. When it gets down to signing the applications and things like that, we'll draft something in writing. You know, the old pen is wired to the hand, and the hand's wired to the brain kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, right.
If a person makes a commitment, they typically want to honor it.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. So it's not legally binding, but it's socially binding.
Correct.
Okay. Got it. All righty. So. You made reference to the fact that if somebody recommends your agency, at first they're putting themselves a little bit at risk. Like, so, you know, in other words, if they chose the largest or if they chose, the incumbent, they're not going to lose their job. So this is a sale that frequently involves a cast of characters, not a single decision maker. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. You know, 20 years ago, there was only one decision maker. Now you have to get the approval of department heads that lead to the decision maker.
So how do you work that cast of characters?
We like to pull them in the initial meeting so that they also understand how our 30-foot view and what we're trying to ultimately achieve down the road, how that affects each one of them. Because it only takes one or two of them and they can mess up your entire presentation.
Okay, so that idea of bringing them in at the beginning, it is a way for you to make sure that you don't have like a landmine showing up as you walk down the road later. Right?
Oh, you're exactly right, and you won't buy in. You want them to know that they're valuable and their position is important. And we follow up with thank you cards to them as well. We follow up with an email that says, what did you think about it? Did you have specific questions or things that we need to elaborate on and be more clear on as it pertains to your department?
So selling to the cast of characters is part of the art of landing a whale.
It is, because you know, even if it's water cooler, they're voting on you. And people are giving their impression, yeah, about your ability to achieve what it is that you've said that you're going to.
Okay, so talk to us for a moment about that initial meeting. Is that where you qualify or disqualify in that meeting?
We do.
Okay.
You know, for us as risk advisors, we need to know if it's worth our time.
Yeah, okay. How do you find that out?
Well, the first thing you want to do is you want to ask them, what is important to you in regards to what I do? And then just be quiet and listen. And in a lot of times, they will let you know if you really have an opportunity, or if the way that you got into that meeting is basically the only way that you're going to get, and you're not going to go any further. And in those cases, we say, listen, you've got a wonderful company. It sounds like everything's handled. If something changes in the future, please get back with us and let us know. Honestly, that doesn't happen that often. If they're in that meeting and they've agreed to it, there's a pain or there's a problem somewhere that they want to see if someone can help them with.
So do you run into situations where you want to meet with the appropriate, I call it cast of characters, but somebody says, no, I'll take care of that. You present to me. I'm the CFO, or I'm the treasurer, I'm the risk manager. I'll take care of the department heads. What do you do in situations like that?
If it's not the main decision maker, we typically will bow out and we'll agree to a different time when both of them can be there, because the one thing that you don't want to have to do is go back in a second time and repeat yourself all over again.
Right. Okay. So what happened before the first meeting? How did you attract them? And is there anything else any other communications that transpired that helped not only get the meeting, but perhaps set the meeting up?
Well, we use AR Connect, Agency Revolution, which you're very familiar with.
Yeah, okay.
thank you for that.
Yeah.
We put our prospects, and we're touching them. Even if we don't write them, but even while they're prospects, we're touching them once a month with little nuggets here and there. You know, something about human resources that may be in the news, something about wellness plans or benefits,
mm-hmm.
or safety and compliance. So we're touching them once a month, even though maybe they've never even sat down and they wouldn't even know us if they saw us on the street.
Right. Okay.
But what they do know is that when something happens, they're thinking, who was it that sent me that email?
Ah, all right. And so how did you originally make contact with them? How did you get them to, you know, it's like that the first big deal you got, there was a flyer that went out with the testimonial from the big contractor. Now what's the process?
Well, I started to say basically spider marketing. We've taken those that we wrote because of that flyer.
Right.
We've done similar things, and we've asked them to do testimonials, and now we've got two pages of testimonials. So it's that attraction that people go, wow, there must be something going on here. They must be doing something right for all these people to be doing business with them.
Got it. Okay. So the method that worked then, it's still working.
It's just that our centers of influence went from one to quite a few.
Yeah, okay, got it. All right, so now back to what happens prior to that first meeting. Are there things that you're engaged in, like company research, that you do prior to the first conference?
Yes. You know, the days of walking in and asking a prospective insurer, you know, hey, tell me about your business. What do you do? That's probably the fastest way to have a meeting ended than anything else. So you've got to go in, and with technology the way that it is today, with the website that you can go to and you can find out who the decision maker and who the department heads are, to be able to go in and to have researched their company. But not only that, but we use social media as well to research the individuals that we're meeting with. What's important to them?
Ah.
And whether it be LinkedIn or Facebook, mm-hmm. or Instagram,
right.
we're looking at, because at the end of the day, it's still about relationships.
Got it. Okay. So do you have a presentation that you deliver or prepare specifically for each individual prospect?
We do, and we make it specific to them. We'll put their logo on it. We'll put their pictures on it, because we're trying to let them know we want to work with them. And the initial meeting, it's basically that 30,000-foot view. You know, what you think we're here for is this, but here are the 10 steps to get to that ultimate goal, and that is you want to be covered, but you don't want to have to pay out the nose to be covered. You just want it to be fair.
Got it.
And that's a 30,000-foot view, is showing them how we're going to get there.
Got it. Okay. So I want to circle back to that 10-step system that you've got. But what do you find that most prospects really, really care about? And what do you find that they really don't care about that much?
Well, we used to think that we could walk in and tell them how great we are and how much we know about insurance and use a lot of abbreviations and things like that. They could care less what we know about insurance. What they care about is what we know about them and their industry.
Ah.
You know, how can we assist them in being more safe so that they have less claims?
Okay.
So that their employees file up under the benefits instead of the work comp. You know, how do we keep their MOD as low as possible? Because that affects premiums.
Okay. So you've got some expertise. So this does remind me. It's been many, many years since I taught the Niches to Riches workshop. But clearly, one of the principles was that one of the advantages of niches is that as you focus, you gain expertise and you become a specialist, and you really do learn about this industry or that industry or that industry. And so you're focusing on a select number of niches primarily?
We are. We've always done professional athletes, and we enjoy that. It's probably more of a hobby for me than it is anything else, but contractors is my number one niche. And what that led us to 15 years ago, there was a large problem with what is an employee and what is a 1099, who is responsible for covering them when there's a GL audit or a work comp audit, who's going to pay the premium for that. GCs were suing subs were suing the GCs. And one of the things that we did when we realized this, and we're one of the first ones in our area that did this, we paid our attorney to draft a subcontractor agreement. And what that did is almost hold harmless to the nth degree, but what it allowed for was our GC and our subs could have a relationship to where it wasn't adversarial, that there was a means by which any type of a claim could be handled and they could continue to work together. And we wrote a lot of accounts just because that is something that we paid for and we offered to our clients.
Got it.
And it made a difference in their business.
Got it. Okay. So as you learn about a niche, the better you get at that niche. The more time you spend in the niche, the more of a specialist you really become in the niche.
It really is. And sometimes we go in and we explain how we solved a problem, and we know in the back of their mind they've dealt with that same problem too. But we want them to understand we've been there and we've done that, and we've helped people to overcome that.
So virtually in every single situation in this part of the business, you are prying somebody away from a relationship.
That is correct.
Obviously that's just inherently hard. Though I'm supposing that by the time you're sitting down with somebody, you've probably got somebody who's not completely happy, otherwise, you know, with their incumbent, otherwise that conversation wouldn't even happen. Is that right?
It generally is. But you know, it's kind of like when you read a book, the ending's already there. If you walk through it chapter by chapter, it leads you to the ending no matter what.
Yeah, okay.
And if your sales approach is correct, you're just walking them down that road one chapter at a time. It leads to the ultimate destination of signatures on an application.
Got it. All right. So let's talk about some of the things then that really do differentiate you from their incumbent. One of the things you mentioned was you've got a 10-step system.
Yes. We go in, and typically at the very beginning, we explain the 10 steps. And then as soon as we write the account, we go into it. First month, we're talking about human resources.
Right.
You know, what type of system do you have? Is it antiquated or is it web based? You know,
mm-hmm.
What does it do for you? How do you use it? Is it used properly? Because one of the things that we have found out, our claims nowadays are not wind and fire so much. Our claims that we're having in our area is mostly work comp and EPL.
Ah, Okay.
So it is coming from people that you're paying for their livelihood, and they're turning around and either having claims against you or they're suing you.
Okay. And so
human resources is a huge ordeal right now.
So you're the 10 steps, essentially, what problem does this 10 step system solve? So the 10 steps sounds like a little bit of a hero's journey, right? I'm going to guide you. I'm going to be your Sherpa and guide you here. Okay. And you're probably going to run into some challenges, but when you get to the goal, everything is going to be nirvana, right? And so what kind of challenges are you walking people through? You're helping them modify their human resources system. You're helping them reduce their EPLI or comp exposures, right?
But basically from human resources to their wellness plans, to their employee benefits, to their safety and compliance, to the risk transfer that we talked about just a little while ago, to their disaster recovery. And when you look at it, and if they have all these things in place and they're monitoring it on a daily basis, it leads to lower rates because they're a less of a risk, and they're going to have more insurance companies that want to give them discounts to get them as clients.
Okay. Let me ask a related question. Yeah, obviously, the best situation for you, and philosophically and frankly ethically, I think the best situation for them is when they consolidate their insurance with one provider, in this case you, instead of having it helter-skelter all over the place, right? Is it agreed on that one?
Oh, yes. If I don't write all of your insurance, I don't know what gaps you already have.
Got it. Okay, so are you willing to take some and leave some behind, or is that an important part of the conversation, and how much do you enforce that?
Well, we ask for all of it every single time. There are situations with ongoing claims.
Yeah. Okay.
Perhaps it needs to stay exactly, you know, like it is, where it is, until that claim is resolved. I may not have many markets that really want it. You know, it may be, and we have some prospects that come to us. They're in a bad shape because they don't have any type of direction as a company. It's just helter-skelter, and their loss runs show that.
Right. Okay. Got it. So that's an important part of the conversation. What about BOR?
Not opposed to a BOR.
Not opposed to it, but you don't insist on it? Or, you know, how do you proceed with that when the incumbent, probably has access to the same markets or most of the same markets you do? How do you deal with that?
Well, and it's because of the service that has been described to them. They're looking for that because a lot of times they don't know the name of the carrier that's writing their policy.
Right.
They know the name of the agent that they're going to call when there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if they feel like that they're not getting that where they are and they're going to get that where they're going to, unless it's a family member or a friend, they don't have a problem signing a BOR as long as you explain, this is what we're doing. And we've had cases where we might move a medical malpractice policy, but for their BOP, for their office, we might just AOR that one and just leave it exactly where it's at.
Got it. All right. So now you've got the relationship, and you've earned the client. They do take more time, right?
They do.
Okay, but. So you've been at this for a while. So, you know, I kind of want to, you know, get your insights, you know, looking back at this. Obviously, you would say that this is worth it.
Most certainly.
Okay. All right. So for agents who are thinking, you know, my God, I'm going to get the client and then I'm going to get, you know, sort of swept into this ongoing, you know, discussion all year long and their 10 steps and so on and so forth. But your observation is that the income that's generated from these accounts more than justify themselves.
They do.
Yeah.
And if you use automation like we use AR Connect, If you use the automation, you can have an email with attachments,
right,
and you put it in there. You click a button and say, on Friday at 2 o'clock, I want this to go out to this segment of clients. It's all done.
Got it. Okay. But, you know, you're addressing a common question that comes up, or almost an objection that I hear. I mean, obviously, you know that I'm a strong believer in using contemporary technology to communicate with the marketplace. And from time to time, I'll still hear somebody say, but, you know, we do, you know, kind of middle market commercial lines, and we visit them, you know, four times a year, six times a year. We don't need to do any more than that. And your premise, I think, is that, well, you know, four times a year, that's 361 days where you could be delivering some value, some of them, and you chose not to, right? So you're using technology not to replace, but to supplement.
Oh, exactly.
And I mean, deepen relationships.
You know, everyone likes to be touched, you know, once a month, and just maybe something pertinent to your industry or something that you hadn't even thought about, but, hey, there's a smarter, better, faster, less expensive way of doing this. And they remember that. It's amazing how many times people say, hey, I really appreciate that article. That's something I need to be doing.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to wind up with a couple of comments or questions, okay? One of the things that you say, because I've heard you say this, is people buy from people that they like, know, and trust. How do you think you earn trust so much that somebody's willing to give you a, you know, write checks for over $100,000?
It's because other people will vouch for us. You know, using testimonials has been a huge help for us, because it's not us saying what we're going to do, and it's not an empty promise. And the other thing is that we follow back up. You know, one of the things people talk about, especially with large accounts, is buyer's remorse. Did we make the right decision 30, 60, and 90 days? So when we have these monthly touches, we're also, in addition to that, following up and saying, here's what we said we were going to do the first 30 days. Here's what we did. Do you have any questions?
Got it. Okay.
Here's what we said at the end of 90 days was going to happen. This is what happened. Do you have any questions?
Got it.
And it's validation.
Yeah. All right. Got it. Okay. So I would say that you use social proof. You also deliver ongoing value throughout the year.
Correct.
Got it. And you present this. I'm a big fan of this methodology. You present your solution as a system, because you've got a 10-step system. And it's always been my observation that people seem to find comfort when any vendor in any field has a thoughtfully constructed system, and people seem to like a sort of a numerical sequence, like we're going to go from 1 to 2, because it provides a sense of confidence.
And when you explain what it's leading to and what the ultimate goal is, they will take that journey with you. If it's helter-skelter and it's just all over the place, you're not a professional, you're just a salesman. And a salesman you can find anywhere.
So yeah, I know that's part of your thinking. What do you mean? How do you define the difference between a salesperson and a professional?
Well, if you're a professional, you're relevant. You're not walking in and saying, "Hey, can I quote?"
Right.
I mean, that's anyone can do that. You want them to know this is an area where you have a specific knowledge and skill set. Here are some things that you've accomplished for other people just like them. Want to know if they're interested in doing the same thing for themselves.
One last question about that approach. You know, can I have permission to quote? Are you willing to engage in situations where you know the prospect is shopping multiple agencies?
Well, I'd be lying if I said I didn't.
Yeah.
I have sometimes. Sometimes in their bylaws, they have to do every 3 years, they have to send out an RFP.
So how do you...
And as long as you know that going into it and everyone's on the same page, but I will still ask in the initial meeting, what are you looking for? How have you not gotten it? And if I do that, am I understanding correctly, I'm going to be awarded the contract.
Got it. Now what if price is their only stated criteria?
Well, it's just ordinarily something that you're going to run into, and that may be number one. We've had people tell us in the initial meeting it's all about the price, and when we explain to them how we get to that point, and we say, "Do you understand what I'm telling you? Do you understand what I've showed you?" And when they nod their head yes, what they thought was their number one thing is no longer the number one thing.
Got it. Okay. So you do some, you dialogue with them enough to educate them.
Oh, yes. Because at the end of the day, if yours is at 15% commission, I cut mine at 10% commission, I'm going to be a dollar cheaper.
Yeah.
Well, what good has that really done for them long term?
Right.
Okay. And I ask them, are you only in business for the next 12 months, or do you plan on still being here next 12 months?
Uh-huh.
You know, right. We've got to think long range.
Got it. All right. So, Greg, I think this is my final question, other than how can people contact you. So what would you say? What would you say to the agency who is thinking, this looks like a really, you know, kind of interesting approach?
I would say if you're an agency owner and you do want to retire, this has to be a part of your plan. When I look at how I spend my day, I'm about 30% on small commercial. I'm about 40% of my time on mid-sized commercial and about 30% on large commercial.
Right.
And I still want to have that foundation of small to medium-sized accounts. But what we find out a lot of time is that people wish that they were, but when they actually look at how they're spending their time, they're writing the small for the medium, and they never get around to writing the large.
Got it. All right. So, Greg, if anybody who listened to this does have a question and wants to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Email is probably the easiest way because I've got it with me 24/7. It's gwilkes, G-W-I-L-K-E-S, at insurancesolutionsgroup.com.
Very good. Greg, congratulations on your success. I think you've 10x'd the size of your agency since we first started working together. So,
yes, we've 20x'd it since the last time. Or I should say the first time that you and I started working together.
Yeah. Okay. All righty. Very good. Thank you very much for sharing your wisdom and sharing your generosity. This has been a great conversation.
Well, I appreciate it very much, and thanks for the opportunity to maybe assist someone else just like me.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Again, Michael Janz with the afterword to the podcast, because I want to comment on a couple of things that Greg said. First of all, Greg's success speaks for itself. Listen to what he said very, very carefully and take it seriously. What I want to address is the commercial lines versus personal lines issue. Greg made a very strong, sound argument for how commercial lines, and in his particular case, the cultivation of whales, bringing in whales, can be an extremely valuable initiative for any agency, and learning how to do it, learning how to grow the size of that whale is very, very valuable and can add considerably to customer lifetime value, a fundamental metric that you should be measuring in your agency. Now, I want to address one question. Is it the only way to grow? No, of course not. The critical thing that you'll hear from Greg and from many of my other podcast guests who are extremely successful is that they're clear on their model and the strategy that that model represents, and they implement, they execute that model with excellence. And different models have different theses, different arguments that support them. Clearly, Greg's model definitely works for him. But I want to remind you, if you have not heard the podcast interview that I did with my client, Mike Matheson, virtually all personal lines, all as automated and systematized in his model as possible. And, you know, how much has Mike's agency grown since I've known him over the last 15 or so years? Way more than 10x, probably way more than 20x. growing between 30 and 35% a year. I will share an interesting number with you that you might want to kind of put in, make a mental note of, 25.89. That's the number, and here's why. Imagine your agency now, whatever size it is, and now imagine it 10 times that big. So if it is a $3 million agency, revenue agency now, 10 times as big, obviously, $30 million revenue agency. How can it possibly get there? Very simply, by growing 25.89% per year. And how do you do that? Well, there are three ways that you do that. You get more new customers, you get more revenue per customer, and you keep your customers longer. And by the way, if you haven't visited Agency Revolution's growthanalyzer.com, and it might be thegrowthanalyzer.com, you should. It will walk you through the math on that in three different scenarios, an absolutely critical tool, thegrowthanalyzer.com. Critical tool to help you develop a business plan and a path forward for your growth. There's one other issue that I want to address regarding personal lines. So in my podcast, in this podcast series, I have had guests that I disagree with. No one, I don't get into an argument with them on the podcast, but I sometimes, you know, I mean, clearly I open a wide open space for my guests to share their insights and observations. One that's been shared more than once is that the way the future looks, agents should cede personal lines. I disagree. And I'll tell you why. Now, years ago, it's been a few years, 5, 6 years or more, McKinsey and Company issued a report, and it created a kerfuffle in the industry, and a lot of folks were upset because one of the things that they said was that the economics for the agency system is beginning to unravel. And in fact, a close analysis of their insights and observations revealed that, in fact, given relatively low commissions that you will earn on a personalized customer, how much outreach are you going to be able to do, you know, beyond simply managing that policy, entering it into the agency management system, maybe taking reacting to an inbound policy change once or twice during the year, you know, the $200 or whatever it is, it's gone. If you allocate its fair share of everything, its fair share of the lease, its fair share of the phone, its fair share of the agency management system, the electricity and the utilities and the staff, et cetera, doesn't go very far. But just as emerging technologies have threatened this industry, emerging technologies now have come forward to support this industry. So that, in fact, now you can engage with the customers at scale. You can deliver value at scale. You can communicate with them at scale, and you can do it elegantly. You can do it in a personalized way. You can do it in a highly segmented, customized way. You can reach out to niches and micro niches and many, many, many micro niches in your customer base, and you can deliver value with them. I have said this before. I'll say it again. Use these two principles to guide your communications with your customer base. One is connect with meaning. How? By delivering ongoing value to your customers. Connect with meaning. No, they don't wake up in the morning saying, gosh, I hope I hear from my insurance agent. They're not supposed to. But if you connect with them with meaning and give them value, things that matter about the stuff that we are in the business that matters to them, protecting the most important things in their life. How can we not connect with them in a meaningful way just by thinking about it a little bit? And number two, connect with them with delight. How? By connecting human to human. And technology allows you to do that, allows you to scale some transparency about who you are and what your story is and why you care so much about your customers and who your team is. So in regards to that question, and my podcast guests, I love you all, but from time to time, I may disagree. No, I would say, no, don't cede personal lines, automate it. I would say, no, don't cede personal lines, innovate it. And use the kind of technologies that allow to allow you to communicate with your customers at scale. By the way, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me, michael@agencyrevolution.com. I sneak in this little afterword in the podcast from time to time to address questions that come to me, sometimes randomly, sometimes in the comment section of the podcast, and sometimes people email me, michael@agencyrevolution.com. I hope you have a terrific day. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.